Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let us take the bus and need a sickle for us. They can have the Cadillac and T-Bud too. But give me my rocket bicycle for two. Hey, hang on there, computer. So thanks for tuning in today. It's Wednesday, March 22nd. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, for another edition of Out There from 4 to 5. Today's show, we got a little this, that, and the other. In my promo, I mentioned meeting plants. And I haven't really had any plants come on the show in a while. So first, I've got a couple minutes of me and my housemate Pablo talking about an amazing plant here in Florence, an indoor hanging plant. So I'll play that. I also have an interview with Betty. Oh, shoot, I forgot to look up her last name. She's the co-director of Historic Northampton, talking about the display, one of the exhibits, the main exhibit that's there now, which is States of Incarceration. And also have an interview with a couchsurfing guest who's staying at our house for a few days, John Paul, talking about the Valley Venture Mentors program in Springfield that he's here for, and his business called Trabatido. He'll talk about that a little bit. And then I want to say a few words about some migrant justice workers in Burlington, Vermont, that were arrested and detained by ICE last week. I want to start with this couple minutes about this amazing plant. So if you go to the fourth floor of the Arts and Industry Building at 221 Pine Street in Florence, and then you start down the staircase on the entrance. Yeah, this is the staircase that's in the sort of the corner of the loading dock. You get a few steps down the staircase, and there's this potted plant. Don't go so fast, Pablo. I need to put this in your face.
Okay.
This potted plant, it's a very common potted plant. How would you describe this plant? Do you know what kind it is, Pablo?
I don't know the name, but it's a hanging plant. It's leaves.
Green leaves?
Green leaves, about 2 inches diameter. And if you look down the staircase, 4 stories further down, it's hanging all the way down there.
So the first pot, it's just hanging in a pot like a foot in diameter. Your regular, like a regular hanging house pot, kind of pot. And then there's actually chains, like little metal chains, like half inch, 3/8 inch little chain linky things that go from the first pot and then about 15 feet lower down, partway down the steps, there's another pot where the hanging plant sort of goes into it and then keep on.
And then there's a third pot about 3-4 feet further down, and that's the last pot. And from there, it's just pure leaves hanging all the way to the ground, almost to the ground.
So the total length of this, you can give it in meters if you want. What do you say the total length of this hanging, multi-potted hanging plant is?
10, 12 meters.
Maybe. All right. Now can you translate that? Like 30, 35 feet, 30. Yeah, right, because it's 4 stories, just about 4 stories. So it's like 35 feet. Right on.
Yep.
Anyway,
come
to the Arts and Industry Building to see the biggest indoor plant in Florence, I think.
All right, bumbling words can't really describe this amazing plant. It's better if you start at the bottom of the steps. Unfortunately, when I started recording this, we were already at the top going down. But if you start at the bottom, then you're like, you go up the steps and you're like, whoa, this plant just goes on and on and on. All righty. Oh, you know what? I also wanted to mention that it's a windy day out there today. Did anyone notice it's a windy day? If you have any of your favorite windy day stories from today, feel free to call into the studio, 585-1033, and I'll try and either put you on the air so you can tell them, or I will try and you tell me, and then I'll retell them. I think the only story I have is when I was going down, I was riding a bike with a little trailer with some garbage bags in the back, empty garbage bags. I thought they were wet and slimy enough that they would stay in the bottom of the trailer tub, but I turned a corner onto King Street and this big gust of wind whipped one up and out of the tub and it blew it up in the air, and I stopped to watch it. And this other guy on a bike, he was standing there on the sidewalk on his bike. He was looking at me, and I was looking at that garbage bag flying up in the air, and he said, "You'll never get it back." And the last I saw, it was floating up and over a telephone pole. But that's not actually entirely true, because I saw it go over the telephone pole, and then I waited and I waited, and eventually it came down and got tangled in a bush, and then I went and pulled it back out. And you know what? On that note, I'm going to play Pete Seeger, "My Oklahoma Home, It Blowed Away."
When they opened up the strip, I was young and full of zip. I wanted a place to call my own. And so I made the race and staked me out a place and settled down along the Cimarron. It blowed away. It blowed away. My Oklahoma home blowed away. It looked so green and fair when I built my shanty there, but my Oklahoma home blowed away. I planted wheat and oats, got some chickens and some shoats, aimed to have some ham and eggs to feed my face. Got a mule to pull the plow, got an old red muley cow, and also got a fancy mortgage on the place. It blowed away, it blowed away. All the crops I planted blowed away. You can't grow any grain if there isn't any rain. All except the mortgage blowed away. It looked so green and fair when I built my shanty there. I figured I was all set for life. I put on my Sunday best with my fancy scalloped vest, and I went to town and picked me out a wife. She blowed away, she blowed away. My Oklahoma woman blowed away. Just as I bent and kissed her, she was picked up by a twister. My Oklahoma woman blowed away. Then I was left alone, listening to the moan of the wind around the corners of my shack. So I took off down the road when the south wind had blowed, a-traveling with the wind at my back. I blowed away, I blowed away, chasing a dust cloud up ahead. Once it looked so green and fair, now it's up there in the air. Yes, my Oklahoma farm is overhead. Now I'm always close to home, no matter where I roam, for Oklahoma dust is everywhere. Makes no difference where I'm walking, I can hear my chickens squawking, I can hear my wife a-talking in the air. It blowed away, it blowed away. My Oklahoma home blowed away. But my home is always near, it's in the atmosphere. My Oklahoma home blowed away. I'm a roaming Oklahoman, but I'm always close to home. and I'll never get homesick till I die. No matter where I'm found, my home is all around. My Oklahoma home is in the sky. It blowed away, it blowed away. My farm down upon the Cimarron. But all around the world, wherever dust is whirled, some is from my Oklahoma home. It blowed away, it blowed away. My Oklahoma home blowed away. Yes, it's up there in the sky, in that dust cloud rolling by. My Oklahoma home is in the sky.
And that was Pete Seeger. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. And you can listen online at valleyfreeradio.org. Online streaming, or you can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. Now, I wanted to say a few things about three young people involved in migrant justice in Burlington, Vermont, that were arrested last Wednesday and Friday by ICE. Young people that are like ages 23 and 24, I forget how old the third one is, Jose Enrique Quique Balcazar Sanchez, who was 24, and Sully Palacios Rodriguez, 23. They were surrounded by four undercover ICE vehicles soon after leaving the Migrant Justice Office in Burlington on Friday afternoon. There was one of the, another worker was arrested on Wednesday, 2 days before. Says migrant justice organizers arrived on the site of the arrest, the Friday arrest, in time to see the two being loaded into separate vans and driven away. The detention came 2 days after agents arrested dairy worker Cesar Alexis Carrillo Sanchez, who was 23, outside the Chittenden County Courthouse Wednesday morning. At that time, Mr. Carrillo, known as Alex, was accompanied by his wife, Limarie Deida, a U.S. citizen. The two have a four-year-old daughter together. And, yeah, this is particularly disturbing when they target leaders of migrant justice communities. For me, it's really, it's like these, in my mind, like these are like the kind of people we need in this country, people who are engaged, people who are keeping democracy alive, people who are, you know, working hard for the betterment of their communities. I tried calling the ICE office in Boston, the field office based in Boston, this afternoon. I'm not sure. I called them. And basically the guy said, I can't give you any information about any of these cases unless you're a lawyer. If you have any comments, mail them to, we have to submit them written. Anyway, if you want information, more information about this, you can go to migrantjustice.net. All right. Next on Out There, I'm going to play an interview with Betty Sharp, who's a co-director of Historic Northampton. I'm here at Northampton Historical Society with Betty. Can you tell me your last name again, please?
Sharp.
Okay. And what's your role in the here?
I'm the co-director. There are two co-directors, myself and Laurie Sanders, and I'm one of them.
So the exhibit that's up now, States of Incarceration, can you talk a little bit about that exhibit and how it came to be here now? I'm going to interrupt this interview for just a minute to also say that Duane Rainey is also in this interview with me and Betty.
It's actually a national touring exhibit. We are doing it in combination with UMass Public History Program. And about 3 years ago, the New School in New York started this Humanities Action Lab. And what they did was to get 20 colleges and universities around the country to research mass incarceration. Mm-hmm. And so UMass was one of those 20. And they looked at what they call the Carceral Commonwealth, which is incarceration in Massachusetts over time. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to take the exhibit for a short period of time, and our space isn't large enough to put the whole thing in, so mm-hmm. we took half of it, and Forbes Library has the other half. But we took the parts that relate to how incarceration has changed over time, particularly in Massachusetts. And so we then highlighted how incarceration has been in Northampton in particular. So you'll see all kinds of exhibits from the 1700s on up through the 2000s.
Mm-hmm. And we were just looking at an exhibit of the Union Street Jail. And Dwayne's here looking at it. How was it for you to see your old alma mater, Dwayne?
Yeah, it just brings back a lot of, drafty jail, that's for sure.
What his name is, Bert?
Merton Bert.
Did you know him?
Okay.
What was he like?
He's an all right guy. I mean, I know him and Sheriff Boyle were just, they knew that boys would be boys. If you went back drunk, they just, let's just sleep it off, and the next day, nothing. Because we used to get furloughs back then.
I just wanted to say something about Merton Bert. I guess after he retired, he gave an oral history to somebody else in town, and so it's all typescripted up for like 20-something pages, where he talks about the jail and how it worked in the community and his relationship with the people who were in there and what he tried to do in terms of helping them on in life.
Yeah, I was just reading the exhibit that talks about the work release program, how that was new, and a lot of guys who were coming into jail, you know, because of their circumstance, had never like done a day's hard labor. Well, they would come back really sore and tired.
They also, when they had the work release, they also housed state prisoners, people who were like done most of their time, and it was a pre-release, so they let them go and work over here. I mean, there was no fence around the jail. Yeah. I mean, there's like a little chain, 4-foot chain link fence, so if you wanted to go, you could just go ahead. Uh-huh. People were just like, you know, why? I just do my time and get out. I mean, you could escape. People escaped from that jail, but yeah, there's a lot of freedom, unlike Hampshire County House of Corrections now. It's just, that was a whole different era back then.
Yeah, when did you stop going to Union and Street Jail and start going
to Hampshire County? No, I made the move from, I went to work one morning from the old jail, the little work release building outside the main facility, and then at night I moved into the work release up on Rocky Hill Road.
Mm-hmm. That was, what, like 85?
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I really remember about that was when the governor, Dukakis, he was, they put a lot of money into getting that jail and getting that up where it was supposed to be. And I just remember working a lot of hours just to put on the spread that they had up there. All the state dignitaries, even before the jail opened, once it was ready. They had some big party where all these, you know, people flew in, and there was like cheese, and it was in August. I do remember this. And we just got back like platters of melted cheese. And I had spent, me and the person who was in charge of the kitchen, Nick Pantaleakis, we spent like about 14 hours preparing all this food, because he was a Greek and Dukakis was a Greek, so we were making Greek food, and all they wanted to take and do was drink the beer and eat like the chips or whatever it was that was up there. Uh-huh. They didn't like touch the soda, they didn't touch the cheese, so all of this stuff just took and melted. So when Sheriff Boyle died, we had to take and put out another big spread, because they had his funeral or his wake at the armory up in Florence. And man, I got out of that kitchen. We had a reception line up the thing, and I stood up there all day long. And my boss in the kitchen, he was mad. He's like, "What? Where were you?" Like, look, I put in 14 hours at least on that last thing where everything got melted. I was getting out of the kitchen this time, because I wasn't going to be stuck in there just making all these platters of stuff for people just to go, oh, isn't that nice? And just let it go to waste. So it was really kind of... that was my hard labor.
So, okay, so this display at the Historic Society, like you said, it goes from like the 1700s to today.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So you work for the Historical Society.
Yeah.
How do you decide what potential exhibits to display?
Well, that's a really good question. On this one, UMass approached us, and we knew that we had some things in our collection related to it. And then Northampton being the county seat, the jails were always here. And so we knew we had a history of the jails and also other people in town who had already researched it. So we were able to just kind of pull that stuff out. Right now we're talking about this exhibit is going to leave us at the end of March. So after that, we're going to be working on another big one for the whole space. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to figure out how to tell the history of Northampton, not just the history of like what people did, but the history of the land, the uh-huh. history of the climate and how mm-hmm. it's changed, how the landscape has changed, how people have used the landscape and everything. So we're working on that now. And in this museum, we have 40,000 objects. So that's everything from photographs to costumes to, well, you can see over there, we have shackles from the jail. We have all kinds of stuff. And so we're trying to figure out how to do that. So that's one thing we're going to have to decide to do very quickly.
Do you have any personal connection? Do you have any deep personal connection to any of this display, like the incarceration, the prison system?
No, I don't, thankfully. And I also see kind of there but for the grace of God go mm-hmm. I. Mm-hmm. You know, being a white middle class person, I can see how if you weren't, how the system is not nice to you and how it's really unfair. And that's pretty clear in the whole exhibit over time. Like you can see even in the 1700s, the people who were incarcerated tend to be the indigenous people, the Native Americans, they tend to be any person of color, immigrants, the Irish, whatever. In the early years of the Stone Jail, which was on Pleasant Street, there were a lot of white people incarcerated, but they tend to be immigrants from other countries. Hmm. So that kind of pattern continues over time. Uh-huh. You can really see, you know, how a lot of the history of the jail just hasn't changed. You know, often there was an interest in reform, and in the 1830s they started a lot of interest in reform, and it didn't always last. So that comes and goes over time. And then I think what's really clear is looking at this big timeline that's behind me is how the war on drugs just really brought up the number of people to be incarcerated in our town.
So I want to ask again about the exhibit. What kind of reactions have you gotten from people who've come to see the exhibit? Like, what have been favorite parts?
I think people are most interested in people. Mm-hmm. And I will say two things. One, on our opening night, we had the Voices from Inside mm-hmm. Perform, and the young women read about their experiences or the fiction related to their experience about being incarcerated or being out. And I think it was really, really moving for a lot of people, me included, of course. You know, it was really, really interesting. I think a part that really is probably my favorite is on that, I think we call it an interactive over there, where people can add tags to the wall where you can put your tag up to say either you've broken the law and not been caught, you've been suspected of crimes you didn't commit, or you've been incarcerated or whatever. And so we have tags from people in Northampton, but I also added some historical tags because mm-hmm. there's some mm-hmm. People in, you know, people who've been in the system unfairly for quite a number, you know, for the last couple hundred years. So I wanted them to be part of our conversation today. And then also this exhibit was in Holyoke before it came here. So a number of the tags are also from people in Holyoke. So you get kind of a broad spectrum of what's going on. So here's another kind of personal thing that I really like is Lois Ahrens, who is from Northampton, and she's the head of the Real Cost of Prisons Projects, and she's been working for a couple decades on that. Her focus is national, but she's a local person, and I think it's really important to highlight the people who live here, who are looking at the broad national picture. And we think her work is really important, and she's written these comic books, which she hoped to be used by activists, but also are really used by people who are incarcerated to kind of understand how the system is really playing against themselves. And at Historic Northampton, I think it's really important for us to collect artifacts of today. Mm-hmm. So we asked her for copies of her comic mm-hmm. books, and she donated
you
them to us.
My sneakers?
Oh, I have a pair of, I should bring our house slippers. You know, what do you call the blue?
Bobos.
The Bobos. I got a pair of Bobos I found. I think I found them in downtown trash. They're yeah. from the, you know, the jail slippers.
All right.
Yeah, we could. You get up there, you got boots on or something, or shoes. They put you in these
Actually,
things.
Actually, just... I would like those.
Okay.
Thank you.
last time you got, I have this image of a inmate released from the Hampshire County Jail, walking down Route 66, walking down Grove Street in a pair of Bobos because he didn't get his clothes back.
Right, right. I didn't know what Bobos were, so well, it's good for us to have those.
They're boat shoes, sort of.
Yeah.
So you don't slip on, like, the tile in the jail and the hallways or anything. And, yeah, so they make it so you don't slip, apparently.
You wouldn't want you to get hurt.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for talking.
This exhibit is called States of Incarceration, A National Dialogue of Local Histories. And what they mean by local histories is looking at it around the country. It is at Historic Northampton from now until March 30th. And our hours are Wednesday to Sunday, 10 to 4, but I think it's 12 to 5 on Sundays. So just come on down. If you want to come a time when we're not open, give a call, and I'm sure we can open the door for you. We'd love to do that.
Thanks for
And we're at 46 Bridge Street. It's the big yellow house you've driven to by 1,000 times, and it's next to the Talbot's parking lot.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us in today on the spur of the moment.
That was Betty Sharp, co-director of Historic Northampton. And the other part of that exhibit is at Forbes Library, also March 13th to 30th. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Forbes Library, that also reminds me, tonight at 6:30 at Forbes, there's going to be a film showing called Gideon's Army. And this is a film, according to the internet, this film follows the personal stories of three young public defenders who are part of a small group of idealistic lawyers in the Deep South, challenging the assumptions that drive a criminal justice system strained to their breaking point. Backed by mentor Jonathan Rapping, a charismatic leader who heads the Southern Public Defender Training Center, which is now known as Gideon's Promise, they struggle against long hours, low pay, and staggering caseloads so common that even the most committed often give up in their first year. Nearly 50 years since the landmark Supreme Court ruling, Gideon versus Wainwright, that established the right to counsel, can these courageous lawyers revolutionize the way America thinks about indigent defense and make justice for all a reality? Come to Forbes Library 6:30 tonight and see the film. Another event coming up I'd like to mention is on Sunday, March 26th, The War in Syria, What Lies Ahead and How We Can Help. Sunday from 3:30 to 5 at Edwards Church on Main Street in Northampton. It's a panel discussion on the war in Syria, now in its sixth year. The panel includes Stephen Rapp and Moaz Mostafa, Stephen Heidemann and Nadia Alawa. The discussion will also include actions that we as a community can take to advocate for and offer support to Syrian people. So this is Out There on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM in Northampton. Now I'm going to play an interview with a new friend of mine who's, I met him through couch surfing. If you don't know of couch surfing, it's kind of like it sounds. You can stay on people's couches anywhere in the world if you sign up for the network, couchsurfing.com.
com.org, something like that. Every so often at my household, we host people, and you know, when we travel, sometimes we stay with people. So this guy, Jean-Paul Tadame, who's staying with us for a few days, he came here for the Valley Venture Mentors program in Springfield. So he's going to talk a little bit about that program that tries to help young entrepreneurs get their businesses thriving.
John Paul, how did you get involved in this Valley Venture Mentors program in Springfield?
I'm always online. So I went to f6s.com. It's a site where accelerators post their competitions over there for people to view and apply. Mm-hmm. So I've been always going to that site. So I went on the site and I was going through the competitions that were available then. And I saw the Valley Venture Mentors, mm-hmm. and I submitted my application. It was quite a lot of process. We went through the first stage, the second stage. They called us like one-on-one, like facial interview via Skype.
Because you were in Ghana at the time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we...
Wait, so you were in Ghana and you were doing online...
Yeah, everything
You're just
was,
cruising the internet trying to figure out how you can get support for your business. Yeah. And you come across Valley Venture Mentors.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So we did Skype with them. And after some days, then they wrote back to us that we've been accepted into the program. And we were very happy. So we started preparing for the program, buying flight tickets and a place to stay. We started working towards everything, and here I am now coming for the program.
How long was it from the time that you first found out about this program online until like now?
I actually, to be frank with you, I applied on the day of like the closing date. I didn't see it early. So the last day for it to end, that was when I came across it and I submitted my application that same day, mm-hmm. on the day of the deadline, uh-huh. that day. And so I was kind of like in a rush, uh-huh. and I even did some mistakes, and the lady got back to me, uh-huh. telling me, oh, like I should go over and change some mistakes in my application, and I did. Uh-huh. And
when was that you applied?
That was, we actually started in around November last mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was like 2 months process. Uh-huh. Yeah.
When you say we, who?
Yeah, because who? Like I'm not the only person. I have co-founders. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I'm not the only person. So if I'm saying we, I'm referring to the other co-founders, like two of my other co-founders.
Where are they?
One is in Ghana and one is in Santiago, Chile.
What is your business idea?
So we just help individuals and businesses living in Latin America easily find service professionals such as plumber or mm-hmm. maybe a painter to paint your room for you. Mm-hmm. So when you need something done, maybe fix your sink, you just go onto our app, post the request, and we send that request to all the available plumbers in your area, locality. Mm-hmm. And they also respond to you by sending quotes to you. You view the quotes, pick the best deal, and get a job done.
And then what other information is exchanged besides the quote you were telling me out in the yard?
Yeah, so when you don't just hire somebody based on the quotes. You need to look at the person's background. Has he done previous jobs? Is the person having reviews? Is he having a portfolio that you can look at to see if he's a good fit for to come and work for you? And we look at ratings and availability. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you want the job done on Saturday and the person sending a quote wants to come and do it for you on Sunday, uh-huh. I don't think you go for that because you uh-huh. also want it done on Saturday. Uh-huh. So you look at availability, portfolio, reviews, ratings, in addition to the quote, and uh-huh. make a hiring decision.
Uh-huh. What's the name of the business?
Yeah, so we call it Trabapido. Yeah, it's actually a combination of two Spanish words, trabajo, which is work or job, and rapido is like quickly or fast. So we picked the pido out of rapido and added it to trabajo. We just removed the J-O at the end of trabajo and joined the two together to become Trabapido. Yeah, so in short, that's what we do.
Yeah, but so this isn't the first business that you've incubated or started. It's your third business, right?
This is actually my third startup. I've co-founded other two startups in the past, and my first one was very successful, but it got to a time I needed to move on and do something else, something fun. I can't be doing the same thing all over again. So I left and started a second company with another friend of mine, and it was going well. We were all happy, and it got to that level where we needed to scale. Then we started having conflict of interest.
You mean like you either had to get really big at once?
And I wanted a company to go through right. My other co-founder wanted it to go through the left. And we were always fighting among ourselves. We were not agreeing on one thing. Everybody wants his or he's done. Like, I didn't want to listen to him. He also doesn't want to listen to me. So we just decided, if that's the case, let's just call it a quit. And we decided to move on and find something else to do. And for me, it has always been entrepreneurship, like trying to build businesses. And I've not actually worked for anybody before. So after that, after the second company, I decided to do something else again. And I started Trabapido with a friend of mine and another friend of mine I met in Chile.
Where do you think you got the entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, for me, when I was a kid, in Ghana, when you are a kid, you need money for maybe buy socks to school. Maybe your parents might not have money to buy you socks, but you want to look good. So how do you do? Either you crack stone or you sell kerosene. Yeah,
you crack stone?
Yeah, I've cracked stone before.
What is that? Like, explain that.
Like you pick stones. Stones from the ground, gather them, and crack them.
Just to make gravel for people to use?
Yeah, like if the stone is like big, you need to maybe divide it into several pieces with a hammer so that people can buy it and use it to do concrete buildings. Like when they are building, they use those stones to construct their buildings. So you kids do that to make money. And sometimes too, we go around selling kerosene because there is no electricity in some of the villages. So you, in the evening around 5 p.m., when it's getting dark, you carry your kerosene on your head. You move from house to house and people buy the kerosene. You have a gauge that you use to measure for them, and they pour into their lanterns. Like we have some locally made lanterns that you pour the kerosene in and get light. So you do that. So from like as a kid, around that was 9-10 years, I was doing that. So I was like, this guy, I'm always trying to sell something, like do something else to make money. So when I finished my high school and went to college, I actually did computer science. So after that, then I went for further studies. That was where I actually studied entrepreneurship, like as a course on its own. After that, then I started with the building of companies. Yeah, so I kind of like build on top of my childhood entrepreneurship instincts after college. And it has been like that with me now up to today.
So the Valley Venture Mentors program, it starts. Can you talk a little bit about the format of the program?
Yeah, so it's like, it's a boot camp. It's a weekly boot camp. So every month, every first weekend in every month is the program. So you go there, let's say May, or let's say April, first week in April, first Friday, first Saturday, first Sunday, you go for the program. You go in the morning, come in the evening around 5, then you close. Friday, Saturday, you do the same. Sunday, you do the same. During that process, you meet a lot of people, your other colleagues from other companies. Mm-hmm. You interact, then you invite mentors to come talk to you, people who have experience building businesses and companies, to come give you advice, tell you things to do. Like if you have some problem, the advice will give you guidelines, what mm-hmm. you should do. And it's fun. It's fun, like, trying to meet all those people. People, like, I think when you get you are invited into the program, there are people that you meet that you might not in any way get access to.
Mm-hmm.
But the program will help you get access to all these people, and it's going to help you, like, expand your network, like, get connected to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you go the first weekend in a month, you don't go again until the next month. So mm-hmm. every first Friday, first Saturday, first Sunday in every month
uh-huh.
for 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're here for the next 4 months, so you can go to this program the first weekend yeah. of the month. What will you do in between time?
So myself, our app is an internet business. So myself, I'm a developer. So when I'm not in the program, I'm writing codes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like building the app myself with my friend in Ghana. I build my side, he builds his side. We push to a repo online
uh-huh.
and keep building. So when I'm going for the program, I pause writing of codes, go for the program, come back and continue coding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are your ideas or goals for the business? Like, where are you starting, and how big yeah. do you want this to get?
So we are targeting Latin America, like starting from Chile and Brazil, Argentina, and Colombia. So I actually lived in Chile for a year. So I got the idea from Chile, because when I was living in Chile, it was a big problem finding service professionals. For instance, I don't speak Spanish, and I'm in Chile. I have a problem with my sink. How do I even communicate to get a plumber? First, you have a language problem,
mm-hmm.
and you are not a native person. You don't know anybody. Even if you want to call somebody for referral, are you going to speak English to that friend for referral or Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
So language is a problem first, and there is no centralized place where you could easily go and get access to these people. So I was like, I faced this problem firsthand, and nobody is trying to solve it. So mm-hmm. let me solve it. There was a time my sink got choked, and anytime I finish cooking,
uh-huh.
I have to fetch the wastewater into a bucket, uh-huh. go into my washroom, pour it to my WC, flush uh-huh. it off, come back, do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And it was a frustrating task for me. So I was looking for a plumber, and I didn't get one. So the apartment I was living, the owner of the apartment wanted my floor changed for me.
Uh-huh.
So the carpenter came in, changed the floor, and I told him that this is a problem I'm facing, so if he could refer me to a plumber. And he was like, oh, he has idea, so he's going to help me fix it. And he uses carpentry idea to fix a plumbing issue for me, and I paid him and he went away. So if there is an easy way for people to easily just find these guys,
mm-hmm.
like, I wouldn't be letting a carpenter who has no skills doing plumbing work be fixing my sink for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another issue might have cropped up if he was doing it, and because he opted to do it willingly, for me, I can't hold him responsible, because he's a carpenter supposed to come and change my floor and later fixing my sink for me. So, mm-hmm. and we started this idea. And we've spoken to a couple of service professionals, and they are happy and willing to. So right now we have a couple of them sign up on the app. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So I was looking online a little bit about Valley Venture Mentors. It says some of the, so there's sessions, I guess at some point in the 4 months, the sessions, they'll have sessions where you try and get funding, you give a pitch.
So every time you every go, time. Every weekend you go for the boot camp, you actually pitch, they allocate slots for every company. So a certain number of teams pitch. So you keep pitching.
You pitch your business idea and it's trying to get funding. Yeah.
And the pitching is kind of like a rehearsal, like a trial pitch, not the final pitch. So when you pitch, you get feedback from your colleagues and uh-huh. from the invited mentors who are coming for the program to tell you maybe you shouldn't have added this to your presentation. Uh-huh. You are omitting this. Add this to the presentation. Like just feedback to make your business grow. Uh-huh. Then you keep iterating, improving day in, day out. And the final day, you pitch uh-huh. and they select 12 companies like into a semi-final stage. Uh-huh. They pitch and they keep dropping until they get to a certain number. I don't know, maybe I think 6 uh-huh. something like that. I don't actually know the final listen. Then when you get to that stage, then you get some money.
Oh, this sounds stressful.
Yeah, it's quite stressful. Yeah, but if you are building a business, entrepreneurship is not like sleeping on your bed.
So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. This is an interview with Jean-Paul Tareme. He's a couch surfing guest at our house for a few days before he goes off to Springfield to the Valley Venture Mentors program.
Entrepreneurship is all about getting out there, doing the work. Uh-huh. Yeah. So though it's stressful, at the end of the day, but for me as a person, I'm really not worried about the money aspect. Mm-hmm. Because when you get a lot of network over here, you mm-hmm. meet a lot of people. People that if I was in Ghana, there's no way I would be meeting people like those that will be coming. So meeting them alone, for me, my purpose of coming is the network environment, like meeting new people, connecting to people. Tomorrow, you don't know. Maybe you might meet somebody today. That person will maybe connect you to maybe an investor somewhere that will like your business and want to invest some cash into it. Uh-huh. So here, it's just like one step. VVM is just like one step for me, meeting people, getting their feedback, improving my business, and from there, who knows, maybe I may get a good deal somewhere, maybe somebody come and invest like $1 million in my company mm-hmm. or something like that. Yeah.
I'm going to just read a little bit here off the internet from, this is an article from Mass Live, actually from 2016. It's talking about an event at Valley Venture Mentors. Let's see. The session is a way to address a pernicious reality in the startup community that initial success often depends on having well-off friends and relatives to provide quick capital, leaving less connected entrepreneurs in the cold. Paul Silva, who's a company founder, I believe, says, "Our hope here is to create a new way to fix a big funding gap. If you win the genetic lottery, you've got friends and family who can fund you at the tens of thousands of dollars level at the idea stage. But if you didn't win that genetic lottery, what the heck do you do? So we're trying to create a way for the investors to meet the really exciting companies and say, all right, I'll give them a little bit of money. It's a down payment." So anyway, so you were talking about the networking being most important. It's also the money factor. I want to switch gears and just ask you, so this program is in Springfield and you're visiting Northampton for a few days. We met on couchsurfing. How did you decide to come to Northampton?
Yeah, so like coming here, I've actually been in Northampton before, but I couch surfed with somebody but I didn't actually go out like to have the feel of the city. So this time around, when I was coming, I decided like, let me just post a request to several cities around Springfield area. So I posted some to Worcester, Agawam, mm-hmm. Holyoke, Northampton, and I never got a reply for anybody from those places apart from Northampton. So even on the bus coming here, I met somebody who told me that like Northampton is a very interesting place. The people are nice, and I actually love the people over there. I love the place. So now that I'm here, I think I'm loving it. Like it's been great so far. Yeah. So for me, I just concluded that whatever the lady told me in the bus, I just used couch surfing responses to finalize everything. I sent maybe 6 requests to Northampton, 6 to other places, and I got like 4 from Northampton. Got none from other places. That alone is enough for me to conclude that, yeah, there are good people in Northampton. Yeah. Our website is www.trabapido.com, and the Trabapido is spelled TRABAPIDO, Trabapido.com. So we have the app live now, so maybe you can check it out. Yeah, those are quite horrible names.
All right. Thanks, Janfa. Janfa, are you listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio? Democracy Now! Will be coming up at 5 o'clock. And I got one more song to play. I asked John Paul if he had any music requests, but he didn't really, but he said I could play this one. This is called Mad Over You by Run Town.
Girl, the way you are, I demand over you, girl, I demand over. love go sweet pass the shit up. Baby girl, I swear, I say your body na killer, oh. Oh, hey, I get it tired of your body, oh. Only on your body.
To learn to fix your bike, how to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá.